Are you a mum looking for some parenting inspiration, tips and advice, stories on the ups and downs we face in our lives as parents, some humour and a little bit of fun? Then you may have just found what you're looking for. Hi and welcome to the Parenting in the Thick of It show. I'm your host Louise Clark, a certified parent coach known to many as your parenting partner. As a mum to three teenagers, you can bet I've probably been there, done that, and heard it all. Trust me, there'll be few things that I haven't experienced firsthand. I created this podcast because I just love to help mums like you find ways to navigate life in the thick of it and find a way out of it. Episode 540. Let's talk about behaviours and strategies to survive your child's upbringing. Welcome to the show today, everybody. And I have a special guest from Australia joining me today. Andrew Fuller has been described as an interesting mixture of Billy Connolly, Tim Winton, and Fraser Crane, and is someone who puts the heart back into psychology. As a clinical psychologist, Andrew Fuller works with many schools and communities in Australia and internationally, specializing in the well-being of young people and their families. He is Mr. Behavior Expert, everybody, and he has a secret to transforming tricky behaviors, and that is to discover the root causes of undesirable behavior and show children how to use their abilities for good rather than turn the home or schoolroom into chaos. He has a new book called Tricky Behaviors, Managing Challenging and Confronting Children While Staying Sane. So you can imagine, everybody, I saw this and thought, yes, I need this guy on the show. So welcome, Andrew. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Hi, Louise. It's great to be with you. Hi, everyone.
Yeah. So today we are talking behavior, and we will try and give you as many tips and tricks and things to help you manage the behavior. For those of you that listen to the show regularly, you know that I'm all about going to the root of the behavior and looking beneath the surface to find out what is driving the behavior. So Andrew, maybe you can explain to the listeners, you know, what got you into this niche within the, you know, psychology and psychiatry and work that you do? What drove you to looking at, you know, getting to the root of behavior?
Sure. Thanks, Louise. So many years ago now, I started out my career and I was working in psychiatric crisis teams. And I was on bridges and in siege situations with people who were in the dark hours of their life. And I was very fortunate. Nobody ever did anything drastic. But at the same time, it was a big wake-up call for me about how do you stop people getting to that point in their lives. And that then led me to think about resilience and brains and learning and behavior. And of course, as you try to prevent that type of outcome occurring in people's lives, you go younger and younger and younger. And so basically what you're starting to do is to think about children and their lives in families. And if we can, of course, help kids to have a great childhood and to live in a family that's positive, it's such a saving for everybody, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It is. And I always, I'm always looking or encouraging parents to look at how they are showing up in the face of various behaviors, because at the end of the day, as much as we would all like to be able to control our kids' behaviors, we cannot, I don't believe we can really control the behavior of another person. And the only person we can really control is ourselves. So how do you go about recommending strategies to parents when they come in and let's think of a behavior now that's you know, quote unquote, typical? You know, I know that many people struggle with what is labeled a strong-willed child, oppositional defiance, determined, persevering. I like to look at it in more of a positive trait. But, you know, when, if a parent came into you and said, you know, I need to, my child's behavior is unacceptable and he just says no and won't listen to me. And how do you kind of dive beneath the surface? What path do you take when you're working with them and helping them to get to the root cause of these behaviors?
Thanks, Louise. So the first thing I guess is that tricky behaviors, and the reason for titling it that, basically was that it does encompass all those strong-willed, defiant, challenging behaviors. And we know that kids are a bit like belly buttons, really. There are innies and there are outies. And the innies, you've really got no idea what's going on inside their heads at all as a parent. And the outies, of course, if they've got an issue going on, everybody knows about it. So you get this kind of range of kids that basically you're trying to then work out. So as you rightly said in that earlier statement, you can't really control another person's behavior. However, you can set the pitch, you can set the culture of the family, what goes on in the family. And so thinking about that as a major issue. Most children, of course, want to be close and loved and get attention from their parents and in a positive way. So it's not that kids are mean or malevolent or bad. It's about helping to bring out what's best in them. And so, and clearly, of course, there are kids that have had a strange idea that somehow the only way I can get attention in this family is to act up, yell out, be forceful and so on. And yeah, so the first thing,
how do I make myself seen? I want to be heard. I want to be understood. I want to matter. Help me.
That's right. I need some space here and some attention. Goodness me. And they're good at getting it. And so the first thing we have to do is sort of start to unwind with the parents about an understanding of a way of dealing with that and understanding how, well, not so much how it became to be, but thinking about a different strategy. Because sadly, what happens is that when you've got a tricky kid in your household, you tend to behave in tricky ways yourself a bit. And so there's a bit of a sad irony in that basically everyone's acting out in fairly negative and destructive ways. So we need to provide a new structure. So sitting on that bridge all those years ago, I started to formulate what really was finally put out, 30 years later in this book, called a sort of method of resolving issues called, surprise, surprise, RESOLVE. And RESOLVE is an acronym. And so we might go through the different aspects of that just to kind of start to think about them. The first one is the R stands for, is to respond rather than react. Now, one of the key things here to help parents to understand is that you don't have to show up to every argument you're invited to.
I love that. Can you just say that again, Andrew? You don't, you don't have to show up to every argument you're invited to. I love that because as parents, we want to show up for every argument, and
when
we do, we are batting heads with them all the way. So I love that. Yeah.
And that's in itself is a revelation because lots of people think to be a responsible parent, I have to basically show up to everything. Now, of course, these kids are going to give you lots and lots of potential for arguments, and you need to be selective because the sad truth is they have more energy to burn on this than you do. And so they're going to outgun you, essentially. So the first thing is to think, okay, what are the things that I'm going to respond to? And what are the things that I'm not going to react to? And that's important to start to think about, that basically there are some key issues. We know if we take on too many, but as I said, they run you ragged. And so thinking about that as an important part, and just to give you a couple of, I mean, children and teenagers are very different in terms of the way they behave. I once wrote that basically if you take an 8-year-old for a walk to the zoo and then the next week you take a 14-year-old, you realize you're not walking with the same creature. I mean, it's an entirely different game. Yeah. And so what I found was that kids with tricky behaviors, their definition of nagging is completely different than parents' definition of nagging. So a kid with tricky behaviors or forceful, willful behavior will ask for things on 9 occasions before they even start to consider giving up. Now, most parents sort of lose their sanity after about the third request. And so you've got to realize there's a mismatch here, that they're not going to give up. They believe that basically persistence wins out, and probably history has proven them correct. Yeah. So suddenly to have a parent who's not showing up to every argument that you're offering them as a tricky kid, then is a bit of a surprise. So of course they up the ante. It gets harder, not easier. Damn, that's awful, isn't it? Now the reverse happens with teenagers, because teenagers basically become monosyllabic. And so often, you know, how are you? All right, not bad. What are you up to? All that kind of stuff. And so again, so slightly the reverse in this situation. So I need to train parents that really, I use the three traffic light rule with parents. So basically you make a comment and then you've got to be prepared to sit in silence for the equivalent of going through three traffic lights before that information sinks in, and possibly maybe with a lot of luck and a good wind behind you, you get a response. Because if you overload the words, and most parents do that, is one person is talking and nobody else is doing anything, and that gets crazy. So that's the respond rather than react. And then, of course, so then it's basically being prepared to engage. So once you've decided that you are going to respond, you don't wait till you've got a head of steam, because that's the worst time to solve it. As we talked about earlier, the first person to manage in their behavior is yourself as a parent, because if you're out of control, it's not going to be a pretty outcome, is it? And so, but it is better to try to have a policy in a family and in a business and in a country of having a no surprises policy. So we know that things muck up, we know things go wrong, but I need to know early and I need to know when it's fresh. And so basically trying to build that culture into your family is important. Don't hold on to an issue until it's a major issue. Come and tell me about it, or I'll come and check out with you. So what that means as a parent, you need to be proactive about the things you are going to respond to. So if I notice a kid who's a bit distressed or a bit grumpy, rather than waiting to basically see if it just blows over, because it never really does, basically it's far better to go up and go, Louise, are you okay? Hey, you know, you seem a bit sort of out of sorts today, or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Then I guess it's about seeking to understand. So the S in resolve is seek to understand. Now, here we get to a kind of interesting point of changing the language in a family. So generally what we're trying to shift is from why to what. So the aim of all of tricky behaviors and the book and the interventions is to make misbehavior the abnormal state in the family, not the normal state. Mm-hmm. That's the aim. Because if misbehavior is the normal, usual state of the family, it's hell to live in, right? Mm-hmm. And so basically what we have to think about is, how do we then shift that? Now, obviously we will still use the word why, but when we use the word why a lot, it often becomes interrogative. Why'd you do that? You know, why'd you hit your sister? Why aren't you ready on time? Why isn't your homework done? All that. Why aren't you ready for bed? And okay, we'll still do some of that. So, you know, you don't beat yourself up about doing that. That just happens. But really what we want to do is, when kids are misbehaving, is to turn to them and relabel this behavior as unusual, because we want misbehavior to be the abnormal, unusual state. So rather than going, why are you doing that? It's far more powerful to go, what's going on for you? Are you okay? What's happening?
This is what I recommend as well, is like, we need to be open and curious. Like, what's driving it? What's going on? You okay? Yeah. Rather than why. Yeah.
That's right.
Love this.
And then we use the acronym HALTS. Excuse me. HALTS basically stands for, so what's going on for you? Are you hungry? Are you angry? Are you lonely? Are you tired? Are you stressed? What's happening for you? Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, stressed. Because that is often behind the behavior. Now, even if you don't ask your child every time, are you hungry, angry, lonely, tired, stressed, just pausing as a parent and thinking, what's going on behind this behavior? What could be driving this? Helps you to be kinder in your response and more considered. Mm-hmm. But what you're trying to do is to convey to this child, this is not you. This is not all you can be. This is not normal. We don't want you to be unhappy or defiant or angry or aggressive in this way. We want to have a family that's fun to be in and loving and all that kind of stuff, right? And so it conveys that strongly. So it takes, usually families, it takes about 6 weeks before you really notice a difference. So it does require a bit of persistence on the part of parents, because of course you've got to remember that kids who are defiant have had a winning game for quite some time, usually in a family, and they're not going to give that up easily. So you're going to have to be prepared just to be persistent. So during that time, you don't want to be overly responding to too many peripheral issues. You've got to work out what are your key ones are, what are the things I really want them to do more of, and then focus just on a couple of those if you possibly can.
And how would you not focus on the others?
I'm
devil's advocate here. I'm sort of, because parents will be like, okay, Andrew, that's all well and good, but how do I not focus? So I'm going to pick two, and it's maybe representative of 30% of what's going on. How do I approach and cope with the other 70%? You know, I'm picking my battles for two. Am I just ignoring the others?
If you can, yes. So, and obviously no one's recommending that you let a child run across a busy road or anything like that. That would be silly. But so obviously there are things you are going to have to respond to. But at the same time, in a way, if you just continue to react to everything, the culture just remains the same. So it's like, you've got to almost have some short-term losses, if you like, to get a longer-term gain. So it does require some tough-mindedness on the part of the parents to really shift the gears of this family. Mm-hmm. It's then observing what's going on. So anyone who's ever watched a child who acts in angry, aggressive, defiant, upset ways will have noticed that there's sort of watching their behavior is a bit like watching waves roll into a shore. And so there'll be peaks and there'll be troughs. And I'm going to sound a bit malevolent here, but it's sometimes amusing to watch as children sort of peak and then they'll start to trough, which is the time, of course, you can intervene. And they start to realize that they're actually calming a little bit and kind of rev themselves up again. And then they kind of almost lurch back into another wave. And so realizing that that's going on is important. Mm-hmm. Okay, because obviously the strategic time to say anything is in those troughs if you're going to say very much, but you don't say much at all. Now, the most critical part of this is the L in resolve, which is to lower the tone. And here we need to spend a little bit of time talking about what's driving behavior. So behind misbehavior is a brain that's not working optimally. And a brain that's not working optimally has neurochemicals that are driving the behavior. And so when we can start to understand the neurochemistry behind behavior, then that gives us a far greater capacity to change behavior. So let's talk about four neurochemicals and what we know about them. Two that we want generally to have more of, dopamine and serotonin, and two that generally we want to have less of in families, adrenaline and cortisol. Now, dopamine, of course, is at the heart of every parent's kind of wishes and hopes, because, of course, this is the neurochemical of motivation. So if you want your child to be motivated at school, to basically go and basically get ahead in life and do all wonderful things, you're going to need dopamine on your side. And dopamine basically is produced by challenges, problem solving, quizzes, social interaction, humor, but particularly by rhythmic, repetitive movements. Sports like handball, downball, volleyball, percussion, swimming, macarena, dancing, all of those movements that require basically rhythmic movement increase dopamine. And so this is why drummers always have wild eyes, just in case you're wondering, you know, because they're full of, you know, dopamine. This is why the most popular nickname for drummers is animal. And so it's kind of, you know, they're wired. And so one of the things that often kids that are difficult to parent or tricky behaviors or whatever we want to call them, basically don't do enough of those sorts of movements. And so we sometimes want to think about it, right, let's everyone stand up, we're going to do a kind of thing, or put some music on and just kind of see what happens is okay too. We're getting them involved in those sports. So the two that we, I'll come back to serotonin in a moment, but the two that we don't want too much of are adrenaline and cortisol. And they operate in slightly different ways. So when kids have a lot of adrenaline, they become what I call chatty, ratty, and scatty. And what I mean by that is they become like, they'll tell you everything. And sometimes they'll, you know, go off at the mouth and they'll argue about stuff. They're kind of wired, you know, they're on fire. And they're burning the candle at both ends. They're full of energy. They don't feel much pain. They're impervious to consequences. If you know, if you do that, you're going to have this done. And that's not going to stop them. Nothing stops in their tracks because they're just basically on fire. And so the things that we want to put into life in families then are repetitions and rituals, pretty much. Now, this is hard to do, but it's important then to go, okay, well, I know, because, you know, of course, parents are not silly. They've been around the block. They've kind of watched their children do these things over and over again. And they've got to go, okay, what's my best strategy when they do that? And so it may be I don't intervene. So it might be that I'm not going to react to that. It might be that I basically go, okay, I'm terribly sorry you feel that way, Louise. That's awful. You feel that way. That shouldn't be happening in our household. I'm so distraught that you're feeling that way. And we should think about ways to handle that. So that you're basically looking at a way, and you've got to find a way that suits you and your family to respond in a ritualistic way. It could be as simple as saying, well, you may feel that way and that's okay, but we don't treat people, each other, in this family in
that way. So you're honoring the feeling. You're not dismissing the feeling. You're feeling this way and all feelings are okay. However,
Yeah, that's right. So it's what
the boundary as well.
That's right. It's not the feeling. It's what you do with the feeling that matters, really, doesn't it? But, and so that basically, and they will be infuriated by that, of course, because you become almost like a broken record in a way, of basically, but you're winding them back down from this sort of blah, 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 by being, so by them being, if you like, they're less regulated, you've got to become more regulated. So you, as they become scatty and ratty and unpredictable, you've got to become boringly
predictable.
Now, they're not going to like it, particularly kids that have attention, you know, really dynamic behaviors. They're not going to like it, but it's a really important process to do. Cortisol's the other one, and cortisol basically doesn't necessarily make kids chatty, ratty, and scatty like motor mouths. It actually makes them sometimes monosyllabic, so they shut down, and then they become wary, and they become resentful, and they become suspicious. And that's not a good state either. And so we want to then get them out of that. So obviously the antidote to that is trust, but we can't get to trust just yet because essentially they're in that state. So it's important to realize that when you're in one of those intense states, the full repertoire of behaviors isn't on the shelf for you to select from. So just saying, Louise, I can see you're upset, just cheer up. It's not going to work because when you're in that intense state, the neurochemicals are so strong, you can't then go, oh, well, I'll just snap out of it. So you actually have to have an adult who helps you to shift. And so that might be, I can see, would you like something to eat? Would you like a glass of water? Would you like to basically come over here and talk to me about it? How about we, and you might just start to move. So you might, so you're just starting to break the cycle of it. So that essentially what happens is when kids have high levels of cortisol and adrenaline, a particular part of their brain called the anterior cingulate gyrus becomes overactivated. And when the anterior cingulate gyrus is overactivated, people get into what I call loopy behavior. They do the same dumb stuff over and over again. Mm-hmm. And with kids, what they do is they argue about everything. And so one of the things we have to think about is how do we break that cycle? And generally movement, food, water. And so in some ways, being prepared not to discuss the issue, but to offer a sandwich and a glass of water or something is a more powerful thing to do. Serotonin is the last one. And of course, it's the most powerful antidepressant known to humankind. And it's driven partly by feedback. Now, all of the research that I did on resilience told me that kids change when they have adults who recognize parts of them that they don't know that are there, that are positive. So when an adult kind of says, you know, you're there's more to you than this. You don't need to, you know, I can help you out. We don't need to basically go through this kind of drama in order for you to have what you want. It's going to be okay. We'll get there. You know, and to basically then follow through, which can be hard because at times, you know, kids can be so obnoxiously defiant. You want to kind of grit your teeth and get angry back. But in a way, it's seeing it as an expression of their woundedness or pain. Mm-hmm. Their fear is that there is no other way to get the attention, the love, the recognition, whatever it is that basically happens. And so starting then to think about that. Now, exercise increases serotonin. There are specific foods that do that as well. It's also just being loving, really, is also important as part of that. Now, and as I said, that's hard to do in that situation, but if you can do it, it's good.
And for them to understand from us that we love them regardless, to almost separate the deed from the doer, from them from the behavior. Like, you love them, you don't love this behavior, but they are not their behavior. And helping them see that we can differentiate that. Because I think, you know, when a child is repeatedly behaving in ways to, for whatever reason, and they are always at the kind of brunt end of us, they begin to believe they're bad kids because they behave in antisocial ways or unacceptable ways, that they are bad. That it's, no, they're not bad. You're not a bad kid. You're just struggling right now. And I see that you are not your behavior.
That's right. And so helping them to realize the fantastic person they truly are makes an incredible difference. The last two parts of the resolve, one's value add. So basically, how can I help? What can I do? And then the last part's empower. So long term, our aim in all of this is not for us then to have to manage their behavior, but for them eventually to manage their behavior. So our aim's not to basically be the person who's always around going through this process. It's to become so embedded that they then know when they're feeling distressed, upset, cranky, grumpy, whatever it is, that there's a process that they need to go through in order to basically feel okay again. Mm-hmm. Because all people want to feel happy. They want to feel accepted. They want to feel like they belong. And once they do that, then it becomes very powerful.
And, you know, teaching that emotional literacy piece is just so, so important, you know, for parents. Many parents don't have the emotional literacy and EQ that they might want to have, and also to instill in their kids the skill set needed for them to be able to self-regulate and manage their emotions. And, you know, many of the parents that listen to the show have heard me say that, you know, the adolescent brain, if we're talking adolescents, you know, toddlers and teens actually are similar, but that the adolescent brain is under construction. The prefrontal cortex is being rewired. And one of the prime functions of the prefrontal cortex is, you know, self-control, self-regulation, and to manage their emotions. So just at a time where they need it more than ever, their brain's a bit of mixed up and being rewired. So it's very hard for them to be able to control themselves and manage their emotions. So we can help them as parents and empower them to develop strategies to manage their own emotions and self-regulate.
So what Tricky Behaviors attempts to do is to provide parents with the tools to take your sales out of their wins. So that just because your teenager or your child's having a massive drama, and they will, that doesn't mean that you should have a massive drama with them. you need to regain that wonderful word equanimity, sometimes also known as sanity, in the midst of a storm. And that's very tricky, difficult to do, but it's important to do. Otherwise, basically that dramatic, erratic, frontal lobe challenged brain is running your family, and that's no fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not equipped to run the family. You know, at the end of the day, they're in no position to be running the show. And yet, if we don't manage ourselves appropriately, then they will run the show. And it's not a nice show to be in.
So I sometimes ask parents to imagine if they decided to put their food supply, basically, if they put their 15-year-old in charge of supplying their food, how long would they survive? Would they gain weight and eat lots of junk food? Would they basically lose weight? It'd be a fairly sporadic kind of diet you'd be on, wouldn't it? Yeah. I think, and I guess then going, well, it'd be the same if you're having them run the family. No,
yeah,
don't do it.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, it's fascinating. And I will certainly put a link to Andrew's book in the show notes so you can buy it, read it, and tap more of his wisdom in helping you manage these tricky behaviors, because it is tricky. It's not easy. Those behaviors are tricky, and for the child. And I think that's the piece that I always try and help the listeners understand, is we think it's tricky for ourselves, and it is, but it's tricky for the kids. They don't know of any other way. This has become, as you say, the norm, and we don't want it. You know, the misbehavior, the tricky behavior has become the norm because it's a habit. Your kid knows no other way. And, you know, they try and they try again. And if it works, they're going to do it more and more. And no habit is, you know, we don't continue with a bad habit if there's no reward to be gained from it. But unfortunately, these tricky behaviors do become the norm, and we cave to them, and the kid knows no differently. So it's tricky for them to manage themselves and their tricky behaviors. So it's tricky all around. So Andrew, is there any, share with the readers where they can look you up. I will put the notes in the details in the show notes, but where can anyone who wants to look you up find you?
Sure. Louise, I was thinking as we were talking, we should also at some stage come back and talk about the A to Z of Feelings, another one of my books that covers all the feelings from acceptance through to zest, because that emotional literacy is so important. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the book's available on Booktopia and Barnes & Noble and Amazon, mm-hmm. and yeah. all good and bad bookshops. I have a couple of websites, andrewfuller.com.au, the .au is Australian, where there's a whole lot of free downloads if you're interested on things like depression-proofing kids and anxiety. And there's another website called mylearningstrengths.com that I set up. Mylearningstrengths.com offers young people the chance to analyze their learning strengths and get some feedback on what they're good at, because I thought that very few kids get to hear from an adult who's neither their teacher nor their parent about something they're good at. The basic letter is free. And so lots of kids have used that.
Oh, fantastic. That sounds great. I will put links to both those websites in the show notes. But Andrew, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with the listeners today. I know they will have appreciated it, and I love hearing all the different perspectives that are out there with regard to helping parents manage tricky behaviors. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Louise. Yeah. See you. Bye, everyone.
Yeah. And everybody, thank you for tuning in, and thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this, as ever, you can hop over onto iTunes, rate and review the show there, share it with your friends and family. And if any of you are looking for any help managing particularly tricky behaviors, you can read Andrew's book. You can email me, louise@yourparentingpartner.com. And if I can help you as well, I would be happy to do that. So till next time, thank you so much for listening. Bye for now. that's it for today's episode on the Parenting in the Thick of It show. If you enjoyed the show, please do share it with your friends and family. And remember, if you find yourself stuck in the thick of it and can't see a way out of it, please send me an email. I would love to help you. My email is louise@yourparentingpartner.com. And don't forget to take a look at the Parenting in the Thick of It family organizer that I created. It's an evergreen family calendar guaranteeing 12 months of use from whenever you start. It also includes beautifully illustrated, informative, and interactive monthly parenting theme pages to guide you through the year. It's the perfect organizer for busy families to keep track of all their activities, plus help parents be the best parent they can be. It's more than just a calendar. You can find the link for this and the other social media platforms that I am on below the description in this episode. Thank you so much for listening today, and I look forward to being with you all soon. Bye for now.